Hey, beautiful people. I'm Sarah, and welcome to my show, Ignited by Inner Beauty, a podcast that is setting the world on fire with body positivity, female empowerment, and self-love. If you need some feel-good vibes and a reminder of just how beautiful you truly are, then you came to the right place. I'm so excited to share what's in store for you today. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 41 of Ignited by Inner Beauty. If you'd like to support the show, please rate me and write a review on Apple Podcasts and share an episode with a friend. That really helps me out. And this is an incredible episode to share with a friend because we have such an inspiring guest. Ido Tini is our guest today, and I don't even know where to begin with my amazement. I must say, I feel like my interview skills, as I'm trying to get better at them, were just especially maybe not great this time because I was kind of in shock and my jaw was on the floor every time she would share something new because her story is just so incredible. I was like, oh my goodness. She has overcome so much. You know, she talks about growing up with very little, being abused by her family, and now making her blind, being homeless at a certain point, only learning to read and write at 17, to now being a Fulbright scholar, also just accomplishing so much as a journalist and now having her very own media platform where she's really uplifting the voices of other people who have also had a harder upbringing. She speaks 7 languages. It's just, my amazement in all that she has done, is beyond scale. I am so impressed, and it's just such a gift to be able to talk with people and have the opportunity to really hear from people and share their stories, especially people who have not only gone through so much, but are so dedicated to supporting and uplifting other people. I hear that so much in her mission, and also additionally, I loved hearing from her, all of her interest and all of her reflections on the different ways we talk about inner beauty as she thinks about it from a linguistics perspective and from all of the many different languages and dialects. It was so, so interesting to hear that, just the cultural perspective of it as well. So this was such a fantastic conversation I had. And without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Ido. Well, thank you so much, Ido, for joining me on Ignited by Inner Beauty. I am so grateful to have you. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today. And why don't you start us off by introducing yourself and talking about how you are ignited by inner beauty.
Hey, Sarah, thank you so much for having me today. And hello, everyone. My name is Ido Otini. I am a Fulbright Scholar, Steinbeck Fellow, McDowell Fellow, journalist, writer, co-founder of The Daykeepers, an international media platform, and a bunch of things. So already the list of who I am is so long. Originally, I am from Morocco. For those of you who don't know where Morocco is, it's in North Africa. Currently joining you from Kansas City, Missouri. I love languages. I speak a lot of languages, and I speak 7 languages and a bunch of dialects. Whenever I think about a concept, whether in this case beauty is an example, I try to think about it as a linguist. My BA is in linguistics, and I have an MA in journalism. So I will be talking about how the concept of beauty differs from one language to another, and how also it the language affects culture. And I can give examples with other concepts as well.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm super excited to dive into your perspective and very impressive to have all of your many accomplishments and all the languages you know. So that is so neat. Not every day you come across someone who speaks so many languages. But first I'd love to hear tell me a little bit about your own inner beauty. What do you think makes yourself beautiful?
Well, I am originally, as I said earlier, from Morocco, and I am an indigenous person. So Amazigh or Berber, native Moroccan. And in the my mother tongue, the word beauty or pretty is an internal concept. And of course, we use that word to describe different things, not only humans, but also like plants, animals, and it's a poetic term, and there are different synonyms for different things. And when I think about beauty, not only the fact that I derived the concept from my mother tongue, but also thinking about how the concept differs from one culture to another, and even from one person to another. For me, it's the way a person thinks, the way person treats one another, the way we see ourselves. And personally, it's self-love that I have arrived to in my life, to love myself and basically love who I am and know that I accept myself, and I know that I am beautiful from the inside, as well, I mean, as the outside. It's, of course, again, as I said, a beauty is subjective when it comes to others. Some people might think like someone who looks a certain way is beautiful depending on their cultural and linguistic knowledge or like their ideologies, even if they are multicultural or multilingual persons themselves. But for me, beauty is beyond what eyes can see.
Beautifully put. Yeah. And so interesting to know that, talking about, as you say, that beauty really meaning for you, like a inner beauty, that's originally kind of like what it stems from, or that comes from that word. So interesting to hear. So tell me a little bit about, I guess first, I'll start with like places. You mentioned you have places you've lived and very well traveled, and how that has kind of maybe affected or shaped your sense of beauty. As you mentioned, beauty across different cultures. How have you observed that in different places?
Well, as a woman, it has been enlightening but also challenging. A little bit about me. I lost both my parents when I was very young, and unfortunately, my family, both my father and my mother's family, were abusive. So, even though the languages and the cultures had the concept of beauty, but I was confused as a kid and a young teenager about those things. I am also totally blind, which I wasn't born blind. But for example, as I said, linguistically, we have words. One of the languages I speak is Arabic. And the example I mentioned earlier, this like the language is rich. For example, the word love, when you if you say like love to like a partner, like in a loving relationship, a romantic relationship, there's a different word for that. And the same concept applies to beauty. Like, are we talking about like a fruit, or are we talking about a date fruit, or are we talking about like a woman? And as rich as the Moroccan culture is, the concept differs from literally one part of the country to another. In some parts, it's like how your hair is. In the other part, is like your shape, how you look, and like being, for example, weight. In the US, if you have a lot of weight, you are seen differently than in our countries because the normal is being thin and being a heavy person is considered a beauty. So that's culturally and linguistically, it's the way people look and sometimes the way people dress. Like in some parts, it's if you are wearing like jewelries, you're wearing gold or silver, that makes you beautiful. Where I was born and raised, we didn't have any like much makeup. There was some like traditional, which is type of like mascara that, for example, women put on their eyes. There's a lipstick, but we didn't, it was not a normal thing for women to wear a lot of makeup. But the way the beauty is seen is that when they are like wearing jewelries, and as I said, like in different parts of the country, is if they have, for example, a long hair. That's actually funny because the meaning of my name, Ito, is a tall woman with a long brown hair, and I am not either of that. Like I'm short and I'm
Oh,
small, and my hair is I tall, but I don't like to keep it that way. I always cut it every year, and I guess I don't qualify according to the culture and language to be named Ito, but of course my mom named me Ito after a woman she admired. A woman who fought during Morocco when Morocco was colonized by France. And my mom wanted me to become a powerful, successful woman, and she named me after that woman. So I guess that part that part is like became true, but not like I can't make myself taller, which I am happy being the way I am, and I love myself the way I am. But like culturally, it's labels that we as humans put on each other, especially for females. Like you have to fit a certain box, just if you move from one city to another. For example, I lived in Asia for a while, and they only considered foreigners to be beautiful, which was interesting. So they had the concept of beauty as a foreign concept. If, for example, when I was there with my friends from different countries, we were considered beautiful, but they don't have it within their own people and their own communities.
wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, I would never, that's such an interesting like thing to think about. But also, just as you were saying, there's a lot of different interpretations of it. It almost, anytime I hear about or learn about different like beauty standards around the world, it definitely reminds me of how much of like a bubble I can be in sometimes, because I'm trying to or as many people are often like striving to fit, around many people around me striving to fit in with the US, American version of beauty, but that's very different than other places around the world. So it does kind of take you out of that bubble a bit and really makes you think about what truly is beauty. And that for me definitely, as you mentioned, is really what comes from within.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I think it's all about self doubt, when people doubt themselves and they're like, oh man, like I might not be beautiful enough, or like listen to the external pressure, whether,
Sure.
trying to fit a certain category that sometimes is impossible to fit, especially if we have to change the way we look. Like if being beautiful is like literally having to walk only on one foot, people will struggle
Yeah.
psychologically and emotionally to fit that, to check that box. And I think it's all emotional and psychological struggle that people deal with. But also there's like an artificial beauty, which is an interesting concept to me. Earlier I said I am blind, so I was born sighted, and I started losing one of my eyes at a certain age, and later I was blinded by a family member, which of course made my eyes not even available. It wasn't there. They basically damaged it, and I lived for a while, like for about like 14 years without that eye, and the other eye was damaged. And people were always like, oh, you like your eyes look so sick, because that was, according to society, an illness. But it was not. It was just a like a different shape, I guess, or a different lack of being, because there was not an eye for it to be good or bad. It was absent. And in 2020, because of the pain, I was having a lot of pain, and I went under surgery, and I had prosthetic eyes. Now, if you look at me and you look at a picture, you would literally think they are real eyes. And it's nothing but what doctors invented. And I remember when I went to the doctor's office, and he said, what color do you want? And of course, I love pink. And I said, pink. He said, that can't be, because you can't have pink eyes. I'm like, well, I really want to, so just like to have some fun. And he showed me pictures. Well, my friend described them to me, but pictures of eyes that he made with an American flag as an a pupil, and put an American flag in it. And they were so really like funny, basically making
Yeah.
fun of using art to make fun of like the whole thing. And of course, I ended up not having pink eyes, because that like the ones with the American flag and the other ones with the razorback, because I did them in Arkansas, and I graduated from the University of Arkansas. Razorback is the university for the symbol for the University of Arkansas. And I said, well, if I get to choose, I want to have brown eyes. And he said, what brown eyes? I said, well, like the ones I had when before I became blind. And he's like, okay, but there's a lot of shades of brown, and I am totally blind. I have no even light perception to like help him choose what brown. And I said, well, brown like honey. And when he put a like a little picture in my face, like next to my eye, and my friend said that that color would look good on her, and we showed him a picture of me when I was when I had my eyes. And he said, I want to create illusion. The reason I brought this is basically what the doctor said. I want to create illusions so that people will be deceived when they look at you, thinking that they are real. And I was like, really? Can you do that? I am an artist, so, but I don't know how to make things. I am a journalist, and I am a writer, but I don't really know how to make eyes, and I have never seen them. I've never met anyone who has prosthetic eyes before. And that experience changed the whole beliefs and everything about the concept of beauty, because they are so beautiful and deceiving that they make people every day say, wow, your eyes are so beautiful. And one time I was out with my husband, and someone says, "Your eyes are so beautiful. I wish you were not blind so that you can just see them." And I'm like, well, I guess they can, they're there, but you can see them. And I make fun of my husband, he's sighted. And I say, "Wow, you grow your eyes and they're not even as beautiful as mine."
Good
The
one.
doctor made mine, so, and they are beautiful. So if you take that concept of like literally the doctor made them, and like how does that make someone think when they see like they move, they like I blink, there's everything, the way he put the pupil, designed them, like everything looks like 100% real. And that, like, I always use that to make people understand like how much ideologies we have internalized, to understand that like you might think something is something, whatever the label you put on it, and then later it might be like we might be wrong, or like why don't we just see like what I say in the my other languages where we say like everything is beautiful, like every creature that exists on the planet is beautiful, and using different words to describe the beauty of the thing that we're talking about.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. A lot, definitely gone through a lot, but it's and had a, as a result, a really interesting perception of beauty as a result of that. Has it also, in addition to your eyes, have there been other ways in which you would say your the your blindness has affected your perception of beauty overall?
Well, it's mainly my blindness. Like, as I said, there's the before, when there was not an eye, because like I was attacked and it was removed, right? Like there was just an eye socket. And then later after that, and like when I had it, I video called my friends and sent the picture, and everyone was very emotional. And even my scientist friends, who are supposed to know how the basics of things work, they thought I was able to see with those eyes, because again, they are so deceiving. They are so like they're so good to the point that you think they are real. So if they look real, why don't they see, right? But they're not even attached to my my eye socket. Like they're just basically we say we wear them. Other things, like other the concept of beauty in general, as I said, I've taken what I like from like the languages and cultures. That's the beauty of being a multicultural and multilingual person, is basically I can choose. It's like you have an option, you have a bunch of languages and cultures, and you choose which one of them, which concept that you like in which one of them, and then you use it, and it's like building your own culture. And that's what I've done with everything, like the concepts of beauty and love and like health and everything.
Yeah, it's such an expansive like understanding of those like values and those concepts for sure. It seems like you just under a new way of understanding it really when you see it through the different perspective of different cultures and languages.
And I think that's available now with, translation. Like there's a lot of books, there's a lot of material for people to understand that that we all have different realities, and what we think and believe is like the truth or whatever in one culture could be seen as the opposite on the other culture. That doesn't mean that we are wrong or the other person is wrong about any concept, whether, again, in this case, we're talking about beauty, but if we do that, it will help us not to judge and use labels for other people.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. And what I know you mentioned you speak many different languages. Can you list them all?
Yeah, so I speak. Some people don't consider them as languages, but for our North African, Tamazight, Tessouhit, and Darija, and the ones that are known are French and Arabic and English. English is the last one I learned. So
Wow.
if you're finding it difficult to understand my English,
No,
I'm sorry about
not
that.
at all.
I've been speaking English for like 10-ish years now.
My gosh.
So it's the last one I learned. I'm still learning all of them. I'm kind of forgetting my French because I don't practice as much here. I mainly work using English, shop using English, do everything in English. So I don't know if I still have some French in me. I still use Arabic a lot because I have friends all over who communicate in Arabic, but not much. My friends in France and French speaking countries, we mainly speak English. It's interesting, even with my friends who speak Arabic, some of them we sometimes default to English.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's funny. I have been to Morocco once, and actually it was because my friend was studying Arabic there. So she really showed us around and was our translator for a lot of it. So it was very helpful.
Wow, which parts did you go to? Like, which parts did you visit?
Yeah, we went to we were in Casablanca, and then we were in Tangier as well.
Also, you didn't go to Marrakesh and Fez and Ifrane. Those are the really pretty places.
Well, you didn't, I know. Another
Oh.
trip maybe in the
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed the food. It's really heavy, especially if you eat it at night.
It was great. I really actually I We had the mint Moroccan tea, and I really enjoyed that. That was such a highlight for me. I was like, oh, this is amazing.
I hope you had it in the morning, not in the evening, and like you get confused to why you didn't sleep.
Yes, it was in the morning. Yeah.
Good. When I came to the US in 2017, I loved inviting my American friends to Moroccan tea. And for some reason, I never told them it was caffeinated. And I would give this college kids tea at 5 or 6 p.m.
Oh,
And here they are like they'd never slept. And like I
God.
meet them the next day and they will say like I feel bad because I didn't sleep at all at night. And one time I said, oh, I think because of the tea. And my friend said, really? Like, I'm like, yeah, you never asked me, but also you should have noticed that I don't drink it at 5 p.m.
Yeah, really, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh man. So tell me about a little bit about all of your studies and your accomplishments being a Fulbright scholar, and yeah, tell me about your passion for some of that work.
I love everything I do. I a little bit like as I said earlier, I was not able, or I guess I didn't have a chance to go to school at an early age. So before 17, I didn't even know how to read and write, like nothing. I was
Oh, wow.
really, yeah. I remember like literally still have her voice echo in my head. My teacher, when she asked me, how do you spell your name? I said, you don't really spell it. Like, you know, we're good. Because I didn't know that, you know, I had to learn
Yeah.
spelling and like I didn't even know how to count from 1 to 3 at 17. And when I went to start school, of course, I was 17 and therefore I was not able to start from the first grade. So that was a challenge. And my only option was to take a 6th grade test and start from the 7th grade. I started and I learned Braille in a day and night. Literally, I learned how to read and write. And I passed the seventh grade in like a few weeks and got my high school degree. When I was in like the middle school through the high school, I didn't, like as I said, I started from the seventh grade instead of the first grade. I didn't have my parents died, so I was homeless for 6 years during that time. And I had a some like of my teachers were very supportive. They were reading out loud to me. They were helping me to like find my passion, and I loved journalism. I like in my culture, one thing like in addition to what I was saying earlier, like different concepts, and because I was born in the middle of nowhere, we had no access to I earlier said like a makeup and stuff like that, but we didn't even have electricity, running water, radio, televisions, podcasts, nothing. We basically were isolated like in the mountains. And we are known for oral storytelling. We told stories. I loved stories since I was a kid. I told stories to animals, to like rocks, like anything. I just told stories out loud for the whole day. I was really like in love with storytelling. And when I went to school, I found a name for it, which is journalism. And I decided that I wanted to become a journalist. When I graduated high school, I went to the university and I studied English literature. And after that, for my BA, I specialized in linguistics. And then applied to the Fulbright and came to the US to pursue my MA in journalism as a Fulbright scholar at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Oh my goodness. Well, congratulations. That is a huge accomplishment. And I'm just more and more in awe of you, of all of the obstacles you've had to overcome to get to where you are. What kind of what helped you through it, and just kind of having that motivation to learn so much? And was that something that just came in that you're really passionate about, or how did you get that support to really pursue your studies from starting at 17?
I'm 34 now, so it's been like 50% of my life was uneducated, and then I think a lot of my teachers and my professors supported me a lot. They saw my hard work, and they also appreciated the fact that I was very passionate and I wanted to learn, and they put all of their energy towards me. They supported me with everything they could, with, of course, very, very limited resources. I didn't have technology back in Morocco, not because it doesn't exist, but I couldn't afford it. Other blind people did have technology, but I didn't. And I love languages, so that was easy. And I love storytelling, so that was
That's so
easy.
great.
And like, I love learning. And I think, like I said earlier, self-love, it was something that, of course, I had to work on. Like, I worked a lot on loving myself, accepting myself, and acknowledging my accomplishments, like celebrating myself. I always did, like, when I passed a test, or it was so funny back in Morocco, like, I would even go like and buy flowers and have fun and like just celebrate my accomplishments. And like all of those things have helped me accomplish all of these things. And the more things I accomplish, the more doors get open, including like having a community. For example, the Fulbright communities all over the world, we support each other. We're a professional community all over the world, and we really are there for each other with like in everything and with everything that that you can imagine. And I had dreams when I was homeless. I wanted to go to the US. I wanted to work for the UN. I wanted to become a journalist, and all of those dreams have come true. I believe in the power of dreams, and I believe in the power of hard work, because they have gotten me to where I am today. I also believe that it's very, very, very important to have a supportive community. If we don't have it from our biological family, there's nothing wrong with that. But we should and have to build our own supportive community, because there are people out there. And without those people, I don't think I will be where I am today.
Wow. Yeah, that's very, very well put. I think that, we succeed by lifting each other up. And it's also just so impressive. You're like, I had all these dreams and I accomplished all of them. That's really a testament to it's not something you hear every day also. So it's extremely impressive. And especially all you face, but it just your passion for storytelling and journalism and learning and languages definitely just shines through. I can hear like your excitement when talking about that, which is wonderful. So yeah, tell me about also the being the founder of a media platform.
When sorry, when I applied to the Fulbright, one of the things I mentioned in my application is that I want to start my own international media platform. And finally, that platform was launched last year. When I came to the University of Arkansas, it was my second day. I met my now husband, and he became my friend, and we then became best friends and dating, and then we got married, and we both co-founded the Date Keepers. And for those who might be confused, because some people are like, "Are you guys a dating site for a journalist?" And I'm like, "No, sorry, that's not that's not it." So basically, the meaning date is the fruits that grow in the palm tree, and date keepers are the people who basically keep the dates. My last name is Utini. In my mother tongue, U means the owner of or the keeper of, and Tini means date. So my last name means date keeper. When we got married, my husband took my last name. So he became Utini, which means Utinis, right? Like plural, both of us. And when we founded our platform, we decided to name it the Date Keepers. So that's the story of the Date Keepers, just for people not to be confused. But basically, we highlight people who have overcome challenges to be where they are today. Like, for example, my story has been in the media, including BBC, but not before I got the Fulbright. I still was able to, like, I still was accomplishing things. But we highlight stories of, we do like one profile every month. We also have our collaborators and guest writers. We mainly publish nonfiction, including op-eds, commentaries, profiles, and personal essays, and stuff like that. We support writers, giving them editorial feedback. When someone submits to us, if we see a potential in their work, instead of rejecting it because it's not well written, we actually give them editorial feedback and help them make it as good as it can be, and give them the opportunity to publish it. We also have a page called the Friends of the Date Keepers, where we promote our friends and collaborators to our international audience, because again, that's from my firsthand experience. I was invisible before becoming the person I am today. Like, now I am known, I guess, a little bit all over the world, and I don't I see a lot of people who do important work and they are not visible. And the gatekeepers is basically a platform to give them that visibility.
Yeah, that's such great work. Yeah, it is kind of important. I also see that. I think I when I in a much lesser sense, but when I started this podcast, I was like, I see so much beauty around me and like my friends and loved ones and other people. I want to highlight them. So, I mean, it's incredible that you're putting this out there. And do you have like submissions from, you said it's international, and do you get them from all over the world?
Yes, we literally have published profiles of people from every inhabited continent. We have
Wow.
writers from all over the world. We have people who speak a bunch of other languages, so we're able to, like, you know, when we when and if we get it, like, for example, a story from a country where English is not their language, not only their first, but if they're not able to give an interview in English, we have people who can translate that. We have designers and we have writers from all over the world submitting, and everyone can submit, anyone can submit. We have a submission form on the gatekeepers.com on the website. Anyone is welcome to submit. We don't have word or page limit. Of course, we don't. We don't publish long form, but short nonfiction form. We are open to any nonfiction writer and or journalists to submit their work.
Wonderful. I love hearing that. And you have a memoir as well. Is that right?
Yes, I am. finalizing my memoir under Steinbeck and the McDowell Fellowship. I am grateful for Steinbeck and McDowell because it was a project that I started a long time ago and I had to put it off for a while, then go to work and then come back to it. But it's been my full time. My husband is an editor and he is co-authoring the memoir with me. The title of my memoir is Blindness is the Light of My Life, because I believe that blindness has given me a lot. It has allowed me to see the world totally differently than I would have been if I were still sighted. It has helped me become passionate, compassionate, and just basically become the person I am. It has given me education and a lot of things. But yeah, so I am really excited to publish it. A lot of people are can't wait to read it. And I am hoping that it opens the door for other people to write their memoirs as well, because I believe that a lot of people have stories that, for a reason or another, are not able to tell them. Maybe there is fear of what others would think of them. Maybe there is, like, again, what we were saying earlier, like, I'm not good enough, or like, maybe people think, oh, maybe someone will judge them if they tell their story. I remember I met last year a person who told me, I don't want to tell my story because I don't want to show my dark side. But I hope that my memoir will motivate people to tell their stories and why and how they become the people they are today, especially people who've had to like overcome really like hard tough situations or like challenges, or have had like abusive families, or have struggled to get their education or whatever the struggle is, but to tell the world their stories, and to also help other people not to feel like they are alone. Because when people think that, you know, they are the only ones who've been through something, it makes them feel alone.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, that's such a great, just very inspirational that you've shared your story, encouraging others to do so. And you know, just seeing all that you've accomplished, it's really wonderful and really inspiring for people who may be in other like difficult situations growing up or have faced a lot of challenges. If there's, you know, as you were talking about your memoir, which I'm definitely so excited. I can't wait for it to come out. I'll definitely be picking up a copy as well. Is there one thing that you think you want people to know about maybe your experience with blindness that you think we wish more people knew?
I have a unique way of like to word to my blindness. I make fun of my blindness a lot, and I don't think people should learn that from me, because maybe there's a blind person who doesn't really like that. I am really it's not I am in love, but I accept my blindness and I embrace it. I am really I love meeting people, getting to know people, getting to know what they love and getting to hear their stories. I don't like blindness is just there. It's just in the background. But yeah, I don't like the way my blindness exists, I guess, in my life is like it doesn't interfere with anything. It doesn't make me different. And it doesn't stop me from doing what I love and what I want to do. Maybe it would if I had another passion, let's say if I wanted to be a graphic designer or something. But you don't have to have eyes to be a journalist or like a writer or a Fulbrighter or like any of the things I have accomplished. It's just having the passion and hard work and the love for what you do.
That's beautiful. I love that. And you mentioned a little bit just about your, you know, your journey to really practice self-love and self-care along the way. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what maybe helped you to love and appreciate yourself?
Like as I said, my parents died and my family didn't really, I don't think love is even the word, because again, this is like we're speaking English here with limited not ability, but basically vocabulary. There's not different words for love in different circumstances, but I don't think my family even like wanted me, and it was basically because for my father, I represented my mother's side, which was like from a different tribe and from a different social background, and the same thing from my other side of the family. Like my mother saw me as my father's side, my father and vice versa. And when I was left in the hospital, I found myself having to struggle with did they actually hate me and tortured me because I am a bad person and I didn't did I do anything? And I had to sit there and think about it. And it was a lot of work. And I am grateful to, the method of writing. I was writing things down and just thinking about things a lot and how it wasn't my fault after all. It was just them being who they are. And I don't know if it was a choice or it wasn't their fault either. But when it was kind of when I woke up and thought, I love myself. I love the way I am. And this is who I am. And if my family did not really want me or do not want me, then that's their choice. But I am who I am. And I love myself for the way I am. And since then, I have been I've been happy, positive, And it has helped me understand that no matter how people try to hide, it's easy to know whether someone is trying or actually it's true. Being positive, being happy, being like the way I am helps me even interact with others. And why not choose, like if we always have a choice, why not choose love ourselves? Why not choose to be happy and positive? Since that helps us be be with not only comfortable, but have the ability to love other people, to enjoy the world and to love the world and to enjoy life in general. So it was a lot of work. I read a lot of books. And I mainly read books about people who themselves had to go through really challenging moments. Some of them were actually way worse than mine. An example of that is Dave Pilzer's memoirs. And one of them is A Child Called It. He wrote his memoirs in three book series. And his mother actually fed him from his brother's diapers. So that was really, really like hard to read, but also it helped me understand, like what I was saying earlier about the memoir, that I am not alone. Like there are other people who've had to overcome those challenges as well and become like powerful people. Like, for example, David Pilzer now is helping other people. He's writing a lot of books. His memoirs have helped a lot of people, and I am one of those people. So, yeah, it's a long journey, but
Yeah. Wow. And now you're helping others do the same, really, by sharing their stories. I love that. Really passing along, receiving and kind of passing along that gift of what, you took so much from other stories and reading, and now, you get to like continue that. I love that so much. So in the essence of inner beauty as well, I love to ask people here, what is one thing you love most about yourself?
I love that I have a lot of energy.
I love it.
And I don't run out of energy. Thankfully, I'm very creative, so I don't run out of things to do. If I had energy but nothing to do, that would be really challenging. I love the fact that I not like trust everyone, but the default settings for me is trusting people and trying to make friends with people. And networking and connecting with people. I love traveling, enjoying new foods, new cultures. I love reading and I love storytelling, of course, because I believe that it connects people. And I love to educate people about a lot of things, to think about the concepts such as beauty beyond what their eyes can see.
That's so great. I love that so much. And tell me about a time when you recently felt beautiful.
I think it was the first time, you mean?
Whenever, yeah, it could be any moment.
I think the first time it was 2016. And since then, it has been like a concept that I have adopted, and I feel it always. It's part of my identity. Like before that, I was struggling with a lot of things because of the family related stuff that I mentioned before. But since 2016, it has been, it's like a friend, it's like a shadow that hasn't left my side, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's so beautifully put. Yeah. It's always with you. I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights about, beauty across different cultures and just your sharing your inner beauty with us. Do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to end on? Anything to end with? And where can people find you?
Thank you so much again for inviting me. I hope that your audience will learn from my experience. My advice to everyone is love yourself, accept yourself for who you are, because you are the person you are meant to be. And if anyone wants to connect with me, they can connect with me through our website, The Date Keepers. And or I am on LinkedIn. Anyone is welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I love speaking with you. It was just wonderful to hear about also all the great work that you're doing as well. So thank you for being on the show and sharing your inner beauty with myself and the audience.
Thank you so much for what you do as well. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode of Ignited by Inner Beauty. I hope this episode served as a reminder of just how beautiful and worthy you are. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe, provide a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and share this episode with a friend. For more information about Ignited by Inner Beauty, please go to ignitedbyinnerbeauty.com and sign up for my email list to keep up to date on new blog posts and podcast episodes. If you'd like to support my mission of empowering women, you can go to patreon.com/ignitedbyinnerbeauty and receive some exclusive content and giveaways. If you're not already following me on social media, please follow me on Instagram @ignitedbyinnerbeauty and Twitter @ignitedbeauty. Thank you again for joining me, and please tune in for the next episode.